Psalm 139 is where we actually were briefly last time. And I do want to go back just by way of review. Verse 23 and 24, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, and see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." David asked God to thoroughly examine and know the sincerity of his heart. He also asked the Lord to try him, or to test the reins, or test his innermost being and his soul, his all. And in by doing so, the Lord would know that he was completely true to God. And then in verse 24, he closed the psalm by asking the Lord to examine him to the degree that if he would find any idol that might be might have crept in to compete for his allegiance to God, whom he loved so much. He wanted to live a life that was totally given to God all of the time. I mentioned then that I find it interesting that the church, for some bizarre reason, and other than what we're going to be discussing, thinks that she doesn't have a problem with idolatry, and yet you have whole denominations who use the scriptures which teach against idolatry to create idolaters in the name of the Lord. We know that many, many times in Israel's history, idolatry was an issue with the Jews. And you would think reasoning would kind of enter into the thoughts of many professing Christians that if you were able to be covetous and able to have idolatry in the desert, how much more easier is it to have idolatry and covetousness in a land of plenty? It doesn't even make sense to think that the church doesn't have a problem with idolatry. It's utterly preposterous to think that we don't have that problem in the church age today. In fact, we don't even consider that the amount of sins that are described in the Old Testament really have anything to do with the church and our lives individually, which again is utterly preposterous. It's ridiculous. And then Paul's solution we saw in Colossians 3 was, since we are risen together with Christ, we are to seek those things which are above, the heavenlies, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Our affections are to be in the heavenly and not here on the earth. The reason why? Because the old us, the old you, the old me, whose affections were only on this earth, that person is dead. And since that person is dead, the new life we have is hid with Christ in God. And so while we are looking and living in the heavenlies, we're looking for the return of Christ. When Christ, who is our life, shall appear, then shall ye also appear with him in glory. You're not going to appear with him in glory down here. You have to be looking for him to come from heaven. Now he gives clear instructions what to do down here. Put to death fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, and covetousness, which is idolatry. That's what you do down here while you look up at the heavens. Your affections are now heavenward. Everything down here is to be dead because we are dead. Positionally, we are dead, and so our affections are to be dead as well. And then we looked at this covetousness, which is idolatry. People don't think that covetousness is idolatry, but that's what the Bible says, so it must be true. We defined covetousness, which means to have more. It is the ruthless and reckless desire for seeking after material things. And it also goes further than that, in that it means also greediness, which disregards the rights of others. It is the assumption that all other persons and things exist for one's own benefit. In other words, apart from you being around, it's just for you, for my benefit. Apart from that, you have no worth. That's a covetous person. And that's an attitude that is quite prevalent, probably with the same frequency as breathing. So it's not something that's scarce. It is a very prevalent mindset. It's idolatry because it puts self-interest in things in the place of God. It is the longing of a person who has forsaken God. Forsaken God to fill self with the things of this life. So I concluded by asking the question, if idolatry was not a problem, then why was there much written about it to the church? And this is just an example in Colossians, not everything that is written about it. If there was no issue with idolatry, why did Paul teach that this has to be killed in the life of the church and in the individual? Why go through all of that if there was no problem? Why did he make a direct link to covetousness if it isn't an issue with us today? And even in 1 John 5, the last verse of the last chapter warns the believer to guard yourself from idols. Why make that an issue within the church if there is no issue with idolatry? And this same argument can be made with every one of these sins that are listed, with everything Israel did in the Old Testament. So the notion that idolatry was a Jewish Old Testament problem, and I need not be concerned about it today, is absolutely ridiculous. And we went to 1 Corinthians 10, which is where we're going to go back to this evening. We said that the Corinthians no longer desired the spiritual, but the carnal. And Paul used the examples of Israel's privilege and judgment as a warning to them to flee from idolatry, which was their true spiritual condition. And what follows in this entire chapter all stem from idolatry. It begins that way. It's referenced again in the middle of the chapter and at the end of the chapter. Idolatry is all through this. Every behavior that you see here is rooted in idolatry. The first four verses, we concluded that all the Jews shared in the same spiritual privilege. Everyone in the wilderness was blessed with the same spiritual privileges as well as the provisions that God gave them. Everything they needed, God gave it to them. Everything the church needs, God has given the church everything. Period. But privilege produces responsibility, and it also produces accountability. And all of the Corinthians had the opportunity to share in the great spiritual privileges that were given to them by God, just like Israel. We said God's divine privilege is given to a people for God's divine purpose among his people. The idea that we have any of God's divine privilege for any other reason than God's divine purpose among his people is nothing but idolatry. And what do we see on the TBNs and the so-called prosperity gospel? It is just that, using allegedly, because you're not doing it, but allegedly using God's divine privilege for a human purpose. It's really an idolatrous purpose. It's not a divine purpose for God to make a so-called church full of people idolaters, covetous. That's ridiculous. That's blasphemy. It was clear with Israel that God's presence and privilege was among them. And when they turned from that privilege, they turned to idolatry. And then began to try to integrate God's worship with idolatry by bringing idols into the temple. So they tried to have it both ways, and God would have none of it. He says, but in verse 5, with many of them, God was not well pleased. Many means most. But most of them, God was not pleased at all. For they were overthrown or scattered in the wilderness. Their corpses bleached the wilderness, bleached the desert. Most of them, God was not pleased. They had privilege, but God wasn't pleased with them. Why? We'll tell you in a minute. These things were our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. If you don't take advantage of the spiritual privileges, where do you think you're going to go? What choice do you think you're going to manifest other than what the Bible clearly teaches in both testaments? People are gargantuously stupid to think that they could outsmart the Almighty. Now, these things, what things? Well, the overthrowing of Israel in the wilderness. That's the these things that he's talking about. The these things refer to the fact that God was not pleased with them. These things, and the judgment as well. All these things were our examples. Judgment is both an example and a warning. Judgment is a warning. And I may be one of a handful of preachers that constantly talk about judgment, both present, past, and future, because you just don't hear it, because no one wants to talk about it. But they act like judgment is not a present issue with God, which is absolutely absurd. I mean, to think that God isn't judging someone is ridiculous. It is a denial of the truth. It is a denial of reality. Judgment is both an example and a warning. These things were our examples, Paul wrote, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. God killed multitudes of people, scattered their bones in the wilderness, bleached the desert as examples to us to the intent. This is the purpose, that we should not follow after their despising of the privileges of God. The basis for the downfall of Israel in the desert was their lust for evil things. That was the foundation. That was the beginning of their degeneration. It was within. The lusts are within. Lustful desires are in the heart. You can't find lust outside of a person. Oh, that's lust. No, it's not. It's not contagious like some kind of a cold. It's in the heart of a person. That's where it's at. They lusted after evil things. The evil things didn't cause the lust. The lust was always there. We went to Numbers 11. We talked about the mixed multitude that was fellow lusting, and in conjunction with all these dissatisfied children of Israel weeping and complaining about not having meat, and they had this reminiscence of their previous engagement over in Egypt. We remember the good old days. We had fish, which we did eat in Egypt freely. We could take a break from our butt beatings and our slavery and go eat as much fish as we want. It's ridiculous. Get all them cucumbers and melons and leeks, and none of that sounds appealing to me. And the garlic, you couldn't put that together. I mean, now think about how stupid this is. They're complaining because God gives them manna. And yet manna could be used in a number of ways. God's provision was perfect. They could prepare it in many different ways. So if they're complaining that they're getting the same thing every day, then what's the difference with fish, cucumbers, melons, leeks, which are onions, and onions and garlic? How many times can you fix that? You could fry it one day, you can cook it the next, you could poach it the next. That's about it. We remember. We had it good in Egypt. Not mentioned about the beatings. Nope, about the slavery. About the brick making. Nope, just we had everything. We had food. Now our soul is dried away. Ain't nothing here but this manna. We sick of looking at this manna. A whole lot better than what you had, that's for sure. And Moses heard the people weep throughout their families. Every man in the door of his tent, verse 10, the anger of the Lord was kindled greatly. Moses also was displeased. He began to complain to the Lord and said, I didn't give birth to this group of people and carry them in my bosom and nurse them? I didn't do this. Why are they telling me to give them food? We want flesh that we may eat. The Lord said in verse 17, I will come down and talk with thee, and I will take of the spirit which is upon thee and put it upon them, and they shall bear the burden of the people with thee. Thou shalt bear it not thyself alone, and say thou unto the people, sanctify yourselves against tomorrow, and ye shall eat flesh, for ye have wept in the ears of the Lord, saying, who shall give us flesh to eat? You want flesh? I'll give you flesh. And for it was well with us in Egypt. That's a lie. Therefore the Lord will give you flesh. Ye shall eat not one day, nor 2 days, nor five, neither 10, nor 20, but a whole month, until it come out of your nostrils, and it be loathsome unto you, because that ye have despised the Lord which is among you, and wept before him, saying, why came we forth out of Egypt? That's the true reality of their spiritual condition. They despised the Lord. That's why they were complaining about their short-term memory in Egypt. We remember how good it was. We can eat as much fish as we want. Well, if it's the same food, if food is food, you can eat as much manna as God would give you. The manna was sufficient for each day. You didn't even have to do anything to get it. You didn't even have to get a beaten eat. They require you to be a slave of Egypt to eat food, like it was with this miserable diet that they were talking about. God said, I'm going to give you flesh. And he killed people too, complaining about it. They were eating the flesh and it was coming out their nostrils, and God sent a plague and killed a whole bunch of them, complaining murmurers. God would answer their complaint by providing them enough meat until it made them sick. They got tired of eating meat. I want me some waffles today. Oh, I want some waffles. You get a food craving. Whatever the food is. I want some chicken. I want some waffles. I want hamburgers. I want hot dogs. Soup or whatever. And now that's good for about the first day is perfect. Second day is perfect. Third day is okay. Sixth day, I'm tired of fill in the blank. You might get a spurt day 7, 8. I want some more. But you're not going to eat that a whole month. Not every day. You're going to get tired of it in about 5 days, 3 days. Normal circumstances, you're going to wish those leftovers would spoil so you can throw them out. You forgot all about them. They've been there forever. We're just not a people that would do this. But those who reject the perfect purposes of God find that the alternatives make them nauseous and undesirable. Even what they wanted made them sick. Oh, I'm sick of this meat. Our desires and lusts for the past will never satisfy. I'm going to be in for a big surprise. Think it does. Yeah, I don't want to remember. I don't want to remember nothing about that experience. There's nothing there. Because if it was so important, why did I try to commit suicide when I had it already? What was the purpose of me thinking that life had any value when I had it? I wanted to leave Earth. So what was so good about it? I could have had more of it. And that's what I discovered. More of it wasn't the answer. I knew I was never going to get out this circle, this cyclical disgust of life. So why bother with life? There's no need to live anymore. In my 20s, there's no need to live anymore. Or if all I'm going to do is have this, that doesn't satisfy. Doing it a different way in a different city with different people and different stuff doesn't matter. It's all going to be a bigger disappointment now than it was when you were doing it. The difference is there are a lot of professing believers that are doing this because it was written to the church, and along with that disappointment comes the judgment of God. In addition to the disappointment, the judgment of God. That's what happened to these folks that were crying in the wilderness. Verse 6 of 1 Corinthians 10. Now, these things were our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. So we shouldn't follow the pattern. Now, I want you to notice something here in this text. Paul's not saying that their pattern is different. There's an Old Testament pattern for lust and a New Testament pattern for lust. Okay, because some people, it's just listen. I don't know. I won't say they were born stupid, but they staying stupid. Okay, because they have this mentality that there's lust was different under the Old Testament than was in the New Testament. That's stupid. He tells you right there, we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. There's no Old Testament and New Testament lust. There's no distinction there. It's lust is lust. I think some people crave stupidity. Paul said these examples, all the things that were discussed here, all the being overthrown in the wilderness, the whole issue of Israel's desires and evil desires and desires for evil things, they were our examples. They were object lessons in an ethical sense, a dissuasive argument. You have a persuasive argument which is given to you to make you agree and to come to something or to embrace something, and you have a dissuasive argument, which is the exact opposite. Leave it alone. You want no part of it. And Paul is on a perfect dissuasive argument against following the example of those in the wilderness. Perfect dissuasive argument. You don't want to do what they did because judgment is a coming. More importantly, it is a despising of spiritual privileges. That's why he started out saying what they had. They had everything they needed, but God wasn't pleased with most of them. Bleached their bones in the wilderness because of their lust for evil things. They had everything they needed. They didn't want what God provided, so the only alternative was go after what they wanted. That's it. And he says these things were examples as a dissuasive argument of following that same pattern. In fact, a dissuasive argument is an argument or a pattern in this particular verse here, a pattern of warning of ruinous events which serve as admonition to others. Paul's saying this is a dissuasive argument, and it shows a pattern that if you follow this, the only thing that can happen is ruin. So don't do it. That's what he said. They were examples to the intent that we should not be one who longs for something or someone, a craver, a lover of something, or of one eager for something or someone, in this case, evil things, as they also lusted, which, frankly, in simple language means things you should not have, which includes thoughts, wrong modes of thinking, feeling, and acting. They are all destructive to any spiritual growth. In fact, will bring forth God's wrath against such behavior. All that was wrong. Still is. He says, these things were our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted or turned upon something. They were already in the midst of God's provision, and they turned upon lust. So they had to turn away from one, because you can't have both. So they turned away from the provisions that God gave them and turned upon their own lust and desires and longings and covetousness. So they sought the things that were forbidden by God. What's that? Well, God provided everything already for your life spiritually. So everything else is evil. If you turn from the provision, I don't know where you think you're going. You're going evil. That's where you're going. According to this, according to the Bible, that's where we're going. There's no neutrality with God. Everything is either good or evil. That's why I'm telling you, I am not going to change one whit from this word. Because I know where we're going. The lessons. Listen, I could write my own Corinthian epistle and virtually say the same thing. We had spiritual provisions at the church, as a church. We sure did. And yet most of them, God had to take out. Because they weren't content with what God gave them, but they turned unto their own lust. These examples were done in our presence as a dissuasive argument that we should not follow in the same pattern and therefore receive the same chastening or judgment as they also did. So all we're doing now is following the template that Paul gave to the Corinthians. I'm sure others who writers of scripture gave similar templates to other churches. All we're doing is the same thing. Listen, a person who's a rebel in that wilderness was a rebel in Paul's day, is a rebel today. For the same reasons and the same judgment and the same solution. We're not going to do anything any different. So if you have the provisions, you're either going to embrace the spiritual provisions that you have, or you're going to turn upon something that you want. That's it. And whatever that something or someone is, it's wrong. Verse 7, neither be ye idolaters. Now, I want you to follow with me because idolatry is all through this chapter. He's going to conclude by telling them, flee from idolatry. After he gives this whole litany of things that he warns the church about, he's going to tell them, my beloved, flee from idolatry. Why? Because it's at the root of everything. Neither be ye idolaters, as were some of them, as it is written, the people sat down, eat and drink, and rose up to play. So the description of some of these sins came from the events that took place in Exodus chapter 32, when Moses was gone. Aaron and the people made themselves an idol, made a golden calf. When the calf was brought before the people, they brought forth a sacrificial meal and dedication to the idol, and then danced in ceremonial revelry as the heathens danced before their eyes. They wouldn't have known that unless they watched someone or may have been a participant of it, because frankly, they act like they knew what they were doing. And it seemed like Aaron was so weak. Moses rebuked Aaron. What do you do? Well, you know, the people brought the gold and we just threw it and the calf just popped up. That was his excuse. The calf just, poof, it just popped up. The calf made itself. Liar. I mean, God spared the high priest because he could have smote him right then for lying. But they celebrated their idolatry. It's what it says. They celebrated their lust. They were happy. They were excited. They were playful. They were indulgent. They were wicked. They were idolaters. That's what they were. So, what is an idol? I'm probably going to give you this definition more than one time. An idol, listen carefully, and if you were here in 1 Corinthians, you already know this. An idol is a physical or material image or form representing a reality. A form representing a reality doesn't have to be something that's visible or material. Okay, it could be a thought, a belief system. Physical or material image or form representing a reality or being considered divine and thus an object of worship. So, what does that have to do with me and idolatry? Well, let me ask you a question. Check your desires. See, David said, Lord, just scan me, my heart, my soul, my everything, because you'll find me loyal to you 100%. But we won't take that test. So what of our desires? David desired God and his will. That's it. Are the desires that you are seeking overshadowing your alleged confidence in God? Are these desires, whatever they may be, do they in your thinking bring forth a reality that is greater than what God has done for you in the present? This is a present danger that we don't face. We see a circumstance situation and we start creating realities in our mind. And then we even conclude, well, you know, this is going to happen. We don't have any idea what's going to happen. And that's idolatry, to create a reality from nothing. You know, we see, well, A plus B, it's got to equal. No, man, it equal that at all. Because we don't have any perfect knowledge of how all this works together for God's plan. We don't have it. But if we allow our mind to bring forth a reality that is greater than what God has already provided, we start thinking, well, you know, all we get is the Bible. All he does teach the Bible. And start looking at other places. Start looking at, you know, you get bored with truth. There have been plenty of people here bored with truth. And you know what? God was gracious to even let them know it before they got bored with truth. It was like a warning to them. You know what? You're bored with truth. I'm not bored with truth. I'm bored with truth. And he started just shooting off in all different directions. I wouldn't go nowhere from truth. That's insane. That's insane. I am so disgusted at professing believers today. They just flitter away from what matters as if it's not that big of a deal. They don't even flinch. There's no fear of anything. These desires that you have, whatever these desires may be, do they cause you to question the lot in life that God has allotted for you for this time? Is it causing you and me to turn away from the provisions that God has given us? Okay, God has given us everything we need in every circumstance. You say, well, I don't like it. Tough. Too bad. I beg your pardon, I never promised you a doggone rose garden. Never. God ain't never promised us nothing but heaven and persecution. We act like we just going to bypass everything God says. That's idolatry. I want you to visualize your car. That's idolatry. I want you to visualize wealth. That's idolatry. I want you to visualize your husband and your wife. That's idolatry. That's all that is. That's idolatry. Visualization is a tactic that's been used by the heathens for thousands of years. Nothing but idolatry. And for a fool to deny the truth before them, to visualize a reality that doesn't even exist, is idolatry and stupidity. And how many of these people have their hearts crushed? Good, it's they get what they deserve. Because they're stupid. I mean, I just can't understand why people would turn from the provisions that are right there, other than covetousness and idolatry. I wouldn't turn from the Word of God to visualize a stupid car or a house or anything else. Because I got a car and a house. Do you think that they're more important than God? In 10 years, both these things might not be around. I've had cars before. They're not here. You know, the one thing, they look nice now, but give it time. They'll be probably out there on a pick apart somewhere in someone's lot. You're going to get another one. If we can't be content with God and with him alone as our refuge, like David, then there must be some idolatry going on somewhere. And David said, Lord, search me and know me. Everything about me, Lord. So I want to have a heart that is completely loyal to you. But if and that's contentment with God. But if we can't be content with God, we got a problem. There's a big problem. Well, where's the idol? What is it? I don't like my reality. So what? Is that going to change it? No. But it changes us. It calls us to be diverted from following and being thankful for God's plan. That's not good. And all this, I don't like my circumstance, I don't like my husband, my wife, my children, my job, I don't like my car, my house, the city I live in, I don't like it. Let me just visualize a happy time. That's stupid idolatry. I don't want to visualize anything. I want to look in the heavenlies. That's where my affections need to be in the first place. Why? Because I'm dead. I need to put to death that idolatry that came along with that dead life. We need to be content with what God has given us and be content with the spiritual privileges. If the spiritual privilege is a priority, everything else falls into perfect place because we see everything from the prism of God's provision and God's perspective. But the minute we don't see it, well, we done put this aside. You desire something or someone more than the will of God in the present, you are guilty of idolatry and covetousness. But wait a minute, big black preacher. I'm not a covetous person. Well, let's see. Let's let the Bible define what we are, not the constant denials during the Barak. Constant denials of the evidence. Let's see what the evidence says. Covet or covetousness means the inordinate, lustful, or excessive desire to possess what belongs to someone else or to possess more than what you already have. So if you have food and clothing, roof over your head, what did Paul say? In fact, what did the Bible say? Let us be there with content. So be content with the basics. Please. The inordinate, lustful, or excessive desire to possess what belongs to someone else or more than what you already have. Whole so-called denominations in the name of the Lord have risen up to produce a church full of covetous idolaters, and no one is saying anything. In fact, they're just a kind of glorying in the mess. You become, you know, lambasted if you criticize such evil. The greedy person, the lustful person, the one who covets, denies his professed faith in God. That's what Paul said in 1 Timothy 6. Those who will be rich, they deny the faith. They set themselves up for disaster. What they're doing is a very denial of the faith. It's not an ever-increasing faith. It's an ever-decreasing faith. In fact, it's no faith. They deny the professed faith in God and scorn his values. What's the values? Contentment. Look at the fruits of lustfulness and covetousness and see why it is important that those professing Christians who are involved in it need to be rebuked. We need to be done with it. And that was the heart of what was going on with the Corinthian church. They, like the Jews in the wilderness, ignored the spiritual privileges which were abundantly given to them, and they turned over to idolatry. They ignored the privilege, they turned over to idolatry, or turned on it. They made a beeline for it. And so we have privilege. We have God's truth. People make me sick with their meaningless professions of wanting the Bible. They don't want any Bible. Been saying that forever, been proven forever. We don't want the truth. This place should be busting at the seams. People don't want the truth. They don't want the privileges that God gives because it means they can't be covetous anymore. I can't live that life anymore. So I got to decide, you know, well, I want, you know, Bible light, diet Bible, but I don't want that full version. You know, everybody's got a diet going on today. Everybody's dieting some way or another. I want to Lipo Bible. I want you to suck that Bible, suck that truth right out of my Bible. Just suck that truth right out of my Bible. Make it a size of a pamphlet. I don't want truth. Are you kidding? Everyone's dieting. They're dieting from God, too. We don't want the truth. It's all right. We haven't read what Paul said happened to those in the wilderness, evidently. This was at the heart of their refusal to supply Paul and Barnabas and their ministry team with the funds they rightfully deserve. Not only that, but also this was at the heart of the greater sin of ignoring the need to become all things to all men for the purposes of the spread of the gospel, which is what chapter 9 was talking about. And we see this attitude is prevalent among the church. So I have only 6 points that you can know you're an idolater. Believe me, we could have done a whole lot more. Because there are people going to be listening. They're idolaters, as defined by the Bible. They're not going to be too pleased with this. Probably not going to listen anymore, thus proving the point. You know, Foxworthy talks about, you know, you're a redneck, and he gives you a list of things that, you know, he determines you'd be a redneck. Well, you know you are an idolater when, number one, you fail to see that the spiritual privileges are far greater than material things. In fact, they are infinitely greater. See this thing called flesh? It's not just a physical. Listen. This thing is not just physical. It's not just a physical. There's spirit in you. Human spirit. There's a soul, there's desires, there's a heart, there's a core. And without the Holy Spirit, it's completely given over to one thing. Everything that is fleshy. It doesn't have a choice, and it doesn't want a choice. Because it also affects the mind. So the flesh, the heart, the mind, the core, a person without Christ, that's all they can do. They don't have any choice. This is all they are. Is just a being of flesh and spirit, not holy. Someone who's given over, they're fallen, they're given over to evil, wretchedness, that's all they could do. So they don't consider spiritual privileges of any importance. 1 Corinthians teaches us that. What about the church? What about the professed church that fails to see the spiritual privilege? We want, everything's got to be new. Preacher, everything has got to be new. You got to have a TV, a new TV, a new. It used to be 720i, now it's 1080i, now it's 1080p or S or whatever. They, so many numbers. They got all these different. Everything has to be new, and it can't be, you know, used to be 21 inches, now it's, you know, 31, 8 feet tall, whatever. God took his whole back of his room and made a big giant theater out of his wall. The point is that the flesh is never satisfied. You never satisfy this flesh. Okay, so it used to be that you could buy a station wagon. Now you can buy. I remember the first so-called vans came out. Dodge had the minivan, and there were vans coming out after that, and they had the Econo vans, and then the SUVs came to being, and they were real small at first, then all of a sudden you got these gargantuan things, look like school buses, you know, the Escalades and all that, huge, gigantic, ugly, 20,000 feet tall, driving, you know, imitation motorhomes, you know, 3 miles to the gallon, $3,000 for gas. And they're just driving all way up, you know. It's never satisfied. And the flesh is never, never content. Never. You can give it the latest model of whatever. MP3, MP4, AVI, WAV, whatever. No one's content. You know, your iPod has got to have the latest whatever. Your cell phone's got to have the BlackBerry. It's got to take pictures. That's what you got a camera for. You want to take pictures, you get a camera. Oh, I can give you a whole sermon on cameras. Yeah, everybody's got cameras now. Everybody's got everything. And you know, you have this whole mentality of materialism. The whole financial crisis in America is nothing more than a perfect example of what happens when you're covetous. You had Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae giving out gagillions of dollars to people they know would never be able to pay it back because the stupid government, which is you, the taxpayer, is going to foot the bill. You see, give people ain't got no jobs, 1% financing on their houses. The whole thing collapses, and we're going to be paying, you're going to be paying taxes for a long time on the stupidity of people in our generation. And it wasn't even your fault, but you're going to pay for it anyway. People crying, oh, we need the government help us, you know, because I can't afford my mortgage. You shouldn't have brought the house, dummy, to begin with. And you knew you couldn't afford it, but you brought it to flip it, and you got flipped. Wah, wah, wah. That's life. That's what happens when you're covetous. You should have got that mobile home or got that apartment building that you could afford. But no, you're going to make yourself a killer. It's time to get in the market now. You know, man, we can get in there right now and buy the house and flip it. You know, you brought the house on the last day of flipping, and now you're going to get flipped right into unemployment right out in the street with two mortgages. You can't afford one of them because you got greedy. Then you want the government to bail you out. Some idiot on channel whatever gives a sob story about how you lost your house, but not how greedy you were when you shouldn't have got it in the first place. To garner some kind of sympathy for your greed. My point is, again, that the material is never fulfilled. It's always something. You never say enough. It's never enough. Even believers, how many times you could sit down in your own house? You have everything you need for the moment. Your foot's tapping. Man, I gotta go get something. Come on. Thank you. Can we go get some whatever? It may not be nothing really that important. It's just I want to have some of this. Or I want to go get some of that. I want this tonight. I don't want that tonight. I want this tonight. I'm not saying that's covetousness. The point is that the flesh is never fulfilled. It always wants something. You might have fish, steak, chicken, veal, pork, freezer bursting out. You want lamb. Never satisfied. You want lamb. 47 different types of fish. I want crab. The flesh is never satisfied. You got wheat bread, rye bread, whole grain bread, whole flour bread, nothing but white flour bread, painted fake wheat bread. I want English muffins. And yet the flesh is never satisfied. Got 49,000 different chips. You want pretzels. The flesh is never satisfied. This right here, this Bible, is the only thing that can satisfy the inner man. You can't get, listen to me, you can't give the spiritual inner man any more greater than this. You can't give him anything any better than the Bible, because that's all he wants. The inner man only wants the Bible. And when you start trying to integrate covetousness and desires, you just wipe that out. Just wipe it out. You fail to see that the spiritual privileges are far greater than material things. And listen, if we don't see it, then we're going to turn on to or turn upon the material. And once you do that, the spiritual privileges go by the wayside. No one escapes this. No one. And this is at the heart of the rest of the list of proofs that you are an idolater. The spiritual privileges is infinitely greater than all earthly privileges. Yet, you treat them as if they were meaningless as to the importance of them, while at the same time wanting to satisfy your own desires, not only wanting to do so, but doing so. The spiritual privileges are, Job talked about it, David talked about it, Paul talked about it, they are so far, as Solomon talked about it, far beyond value, far beyond our comprehension of value. Why do we treat it with such contempt? Because we're idolaters. As I said on the onset, if Israel could find idolatry in a desert, what makes you think that you can't be an idolater in a land of plenty? And it keeps getting plenty. Just take some time, go down one of the major, maybe Beach Boulevard. Just go as far up Beach Boulevard as you can from the ocean. And if you can count that far or that high, just count all the stores that you can see all the way up Beach Boulevard. You won't see one-tenth that many houses, but you see tons of stores of every variety. You could eat your ice cream on one side of the street, get your gas filled up on the other side of the street, eat fish on one side, a burger, a steak, a taco, a burrito, whatever. You can just go up and down the street and if you want sunglasses, you want medicine, you want makeup, you want hair gel, you want what, and you just keep going up the street, and every single desire can be fulfilled just by going up one long street. You want to buy a book? I'm sure there's a bookstore somewhere around there. You want a 99-cent store? Yep, there's one. Banks, plenty. Mm-hmm. Car wash? Might as well. You can get that done too. Just going up by one street. One street. Beach Boulevard. Beach will take you all the way from Huntington Beach all the way up to La Habra and beyond. You start going up in a mountain at that point. It'll turn into a mountain. Beach Boulevard turn into a trail up in some house somewhere way up on the top of the hill. And you'll find everything you need and everything you can afford. You want to go to a couple of amusement parks? You can go to Disneyland, sure. You can go to Knott's, sure. Go wherever. Just keep going up. You want to go to Target? Yeah. You want? This never satisfies. It's always something. That's one street. You can go up Harbor Boulevard. Same thing. Harbor take you down to the water. Go all the way up Harbor Boulevard. Same thing. You can go to Euclid. Same thing. You want Vietnamese food? Fine. You want Persian food? Fine. Whatever you want. It's here. And we're not satisfied. Because the flesh cannot be satisfied. We live in our heads. I'm telling you. This is where most of our reality is, in our noggins. We ain't living for real. Spiritual prayer will just keep getting set aside. Number two, a failure to supply the man or men of God their due and the efforts of the work of the gospel and church because of your own carnal ventures. Yes, I do. That's idolatry too. The reason behind that usually is idolatry. It's hard to write that big money for the truth. I ain't talking about no lie. Because, listen, if a man promise you covetousness, you're going to write that check. Because the flesh goes to flesh. I've known people that have written $10,000 checks to false teachers. And the checks bounced. And the false teacher threatened them. They went out and put their house up for mortgage to get that money. And then called me. What do I do? It's too late for what do you do? Well, he promised me 100-fold. See how that is? Because we covetous. You could have invested that money. In fact, you didn't have to do any of that stuff. You just should have never watched the beginning, but there's something. Listen to me. Everybody's where they're at in the church for a reason, and everybody's not where they're at for a reason. If people don't just bump into, you know, covetous Baptist church without a reason, and they don't stay there without a reason, they're there because they want to be there. If they wanted the truth, God would give them a place where truth is, and they go. But they lie because they don't want the truth. Like I've said for 20 years, we don't want it, and we don't want it. And the whole thing about people don't want to write no big check to not to the word. Oh, no. Mm-mm. And all that is an admission of covetousness and idolatry for many in the church. Now, they aren't the least bit content, for example, with their six or seven figure retirement accounts and thousands in their checking and savings. But they're very content. I've seen it even in this church many times when they receive a financial statement from the church. The church is $2 in the black. They're happy because church got $2 in the black. They're happy about it. Oh, we blessed to the Lord. We got $2. We in the black. Mm-hmm. And what do you tell God with that? But that's okay. Number three, you have ignored the command to go and make disciples. In simpler words, you are not about to become all things to all men for the sake of the gospel because you have no regard for the gospel or lost souls. That's what, when you're covetous, these things happen. I'm just going to go through the list and next time we'll deal with them more specifically. Number four, you ignore God's supremacy in all matters of your life and the life of your family if you have one. Number five, you become bitter towards God, man, or God's man or men. You become bitter towards God, God's man or men because the truth they preach and teach you, you choose to disobey. That automatic bitterness. Automatic. Instant. It doesn't brew. It's automatic. Number six, you will tolerate and justify idolatrous behavior in your life and in the life of your family, etc., etc., etc. These things happen. I've seen them happen. They have happened. They're going to keep happening until people end idolatry. They're going to end it. When they end it, that's when their eyes get open like, woo, now I understand the privileges I have. I really see what God has given me. I have, you know, people like to complain. You're getting away your free stuff, you know, for a million years. Now you want $5.95 for your books. You ain't got to buy nothing. What's wrong with you? You almost have 400 audio messages you can download for nothing. Name any other ministry on this planet that's doing it that you know of the large ones. Name them. You can't because they ain't none. They're not going to do that stuff. They're not going to give you whole book studies. They're not about to do it. And people want to complain because they got to dole out $5.95 for an ebook. The whole church world is full of idolaters. Tight-fisted bunch of cheapskates that wouldn't know a spiritual privilege if it fell on their head from 1,000 feet. Lord, thank you again for showing us, Lord, that there is a great danger in idolatry, a great danger. If we're not careful, we either will be one or are already one and don't know it or don't want to admit it. Lord, may it not be true of any of us, Lord. And of those listening, Father, may we examine our own hearts and see how important a spiritual privilege is, Lord, because that's the foundation to everything. Everything rises and falls upon us and our understanding of the spiritual privileges. And it is these spiritual privileges, Lord, that direct and correct the life. Thank you again, Father, for your mercies tonight. Bless the giving. In Jesus' name, amen.